This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight,
innocent people, normal civilians trying to go about their daily lives in one of the poorest countries in the world, and guys with guns just won't stop fighting and won't stop their predatory behavior, you know, stealing, raping, killing against civilians.
That's Joel Charney, director of the Norwegian Refugee Council USA, talking about Central African Republic. Details coming up.
Also, DRC state security forces are suspects in the murders of two of their colleagues. And 20-year-old Nobel laureate Malala Yousafzai visited Maiduguri in northeast Nigeria yesterday.
We have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, the UN's humanitarian chief says the violence in Central African Republic has taken on a more religious and ethnic dimension. Stephen O'Brien says the conflict has reached terrible proportions. O'Brien has visited Bangassou, a southeastern town about 730 kilometers from the capital Bangui. It had been spared sectarian violence until last May. Now, thousands of Muslim residents have taken refuge in a cathedral following increased attacks by mostly Christian anti-Balaka militias. O'Brien says the only building that have not been destroyed in the area belong to Christians. The Associated Press reports that since violence began in southeast CAR in May, more than 300 people have been killed and about 100,000 displaced. Conflict erupted in 2013 when Muslim Salika rebels attacked the country. Anti-Balaka militias then formed a response. Since then, civilians have been the primary targets of both sides. The UN humanitarian chief is now visiting the DRC.
In related news, the Norwegian Refugee Council says the Central African Republic is spiraling into a new crisis due to lack of international attention and a shortage of humanitarian aid. The NRC warns there is an urgent need for more funding to ensure people receive basic life-saving assistance. The humanitarian organization has worked in the CAR for years and recently listed the country as the most neglected displacement crisis in the world. Joel Charney is director of NRC USA. He spoke with me about the humanitarian situation in the CAR.
What's so discouraging for people is that they can't get out of this violent spiral. What people are experiencing are innocent people, normal civilians trying to go about their daily lives in one of the poorest countries in the world, and guys with guns just won't stop fighting and won't stop their predatory behavior, you know, stealing, raping, killing against civilians. It's a classic where 98% of the population of the Central African Republic, I'm absolutely certain, can live together in peace, but the various armed forces simply won't allow them to do so.
Is there any one thing in particular that is fueling this recent increase in violence?
I don't really think there's any one thing. One fault line is religious. It's, you know, Muslim and Christian animus, that there's a division between the factions based on religious lines. But whether that's the root cause or not, I think, is hard to say. Some of it may just be a legacy of lack of political power and disenfranchisement. What we're seeing is basically the people who have the guns benefit from the continuation of the war. In other words, it's a warlord-type situation, which we became familiar with in Darfur in Sudan, where people who've been marginalized get guns and can enforce their power. It's very hard to break that spiral, and we've seen peace agreements. There was a ceasefire in 2014 that didn't hold. There was just a ceremony in Rome with much fanfare facilitated by the San Egidio Order, seemingly again bringing a stop to the conflict. But the problem is these marauding gangs of gunmen don't really listen to their leaders. I mean, are these coherent political movements? basically no. That's what makes it so difficult for the conflict to stop.
Looking at the situation of the people, what exactly are they experiencing because of this?
They're basically forced to leave their homes as the conflict moves through their villages. For the most part, rural CAR, it's almost entirely agrarian farmers with some nomadic herdsmen. And when the gunmen start preying on your village, the people don't stop and wait to see what's going to happen. They pick up their meager belongings and head to a safe place. That might be the forest nearby. That might be a neighboring town. I mean, we just interviewed someone who left Bombori to find a safer place, and they left because a member of one of the armed groups burnt their house and killed this man's brother, and he basically said, "I'm out." So you have to imagine just a level of poverty and isolation. There's a lack of police force that can protect people, a lack of a government army or security force that can protect people.
With half of the population in need of humanitarian assistance, why is this situation not more in the forefront of the international community?
This goes to my heart because I was a Peace Corps volunteer in the Central African Republic, and it's always been neglected. It's in the middle of Africa, very isolated, small population, very few people outside the CAR to know about it. And we're in a period, you know, with famine or famine threat in South Sudan and Yemen. We've got the Syria civil war. I mean, there's just no way, unfortunately, for a beleaguered country so isolated and unknown like the CAR. We, as Norwegian Refugee Council, we just listed the Central African Republic as the world's number one neglected crisis. You're not going to get a global movement around the Central African Republic. So what we depend on, I think, are people in the know, governments in the know, donors who follow humanitarian situations. There we expect them to rise to the occasion, and I think that's what's disappointing.
What do you see in the months ahead for the people of the CAR?
I'm really worried. I don't see the violence stopping. It's a really discouraging situation. I mean, I'd like to be optimistic and say that the violence can stop, but with the failure of this latest peace accord, which was done very carefully and very seriously by Sanahedio, we're kind of back to square one. And I think we're going to continue to see this pattern of violence and displacement, certainly for the balance of this year.
That was Joel Charney, director of the Norwegian Refugee Council, USA. He spoke with me from Washington.
AFP reports that UN investigators have not ruled out DRC state security forces as suspects in the murders of two of their colleagues. American Michael Sharp and Zaida Catlin were found in a shallow grave on March 12th, several weeks after going missing. The French news agency says it has seen a confidential report on the preliminary analysis of phone records, video, and interviews related to the case. The report to the UN Security Council says evidence does not yet allow the group to attribute responsibility for the murders. It adds, however, that evidence does not preclude the involvement of different actors, such as pro- or anti-government factions, other armed groups, as well as members of state security services.
20-year-old Nobel laureate Malala Yousafzai visited Maiduguri in northeast Nigeria yesterday. The Pakistani activist, who was nearly killed by the Taliban in 2012, promoted education for girls. The Associated Press reports about 1,400 schools had been destroyed in the region due to the insurgency by Boko Haram militants. And since 2009, when the insurgency began, nearly 2,300 teachers have been killed. A 15-year-old Nigerian girl who met Malala said that her story gives her hope, and that girls want to go to school and become something in life.
In other news on Nigeria, with the recent military gains against Boko Haram, the government reportedly is renewing its search for oil in the north. AFP reports the government is exploring inland basins from central Benue State to northeastern Borno State. The spokesman for the Nigerian National Petroleum Corporation says President Buhari would be very happy if a significant find was made. However, one analyst says the discovery of oil could encourage Boko Haram to launch more attacks.
Funeral services were held today for one of the first black women in South Africa to publicly declare she was HIV positive. Prudence Mabele, president of the Society for Women and AIDS in Africa and co-founder of the Treatment Action Campaign, died last week of pneumonia. She was 46. Deputy President Cyril Ramaphosa spoke at today's church services in Randburg, describing Mabele as fearless and steadfast. He said her fight was not just for the rights of people living with HIV, but for the rights, dignity, and well-being of every person who suffered discrimination, oppression, stigmatization, and exploitation. For more on the life of Prudence Mabele, VOA's Joe DiCapua spoke with reporter Delia Robertson in Johannesburg.
She was the kind of person who was open, honest, and was one of the very first women in South Africa to come out and declare that she was HIV positive. That was as early as 1992. You know, she was always at the forefront of people who were fighting AIDS, trying to prevent its spread, fighting for treatment and so on, right from those early days, even before we had a democratic government in South Africa. She was so open, so honest, so insistent. You know, people couldn't refuse to ignore her.
Take us back to 1992 in South Africa and what it was like for a young woman to come out publicly to say she was HIV positive.
Well, in 1992, the negotiations for the democratic South Africa that was to come was underway. The government of the time, the National Party government, had pretty much ignored HIV, and people in South Africa were really unaware of the extent of the growing pandemic within society. But it was people like Prudence who realized that there were many people who had HIV and was one of the first to speak out, as I said. And then, of course, in the immediate aftermath of democracy in South Africa, once again the issue fell by the wayside because there was just so much else going on and so much change was happening in society and so much needed to be done, and there were so many demands on the government for education, for health and that sort of thing, that it somewhat slipped through the cracks. And so people who had HIV struggled to get treatment. Some people got treatment, but very few in those days.
Now, she died fairly young, 46, and she succumbed to pneumonia, which is one of the opportunistic infections that attack people who are infected with HIV. But we have the antiretroviral drugs now. So could you talk a little bit about her illness? Had she been ill for a while?
No, I think it was fairly sudden, and she had been on HIV treatment. As soon as it became available in the public health system, she started taking ARVs and believed in them. And I think the kind of person she was most likely very consistent in taking her medication. But who knows, given the period of time when she first was diagnosed until she was treated, who knows, you know, what might have happened to her general state of health at that time. The kind of pneumonia you can get with HIV can be very devastating and have a very potent effect on the body. So maybe she was just one of the unlucky ones who, even though she was on ARVs, even though she was following the requirements for taking the medication and so on, maybe this time, you know, she just got too sick.
Now, Mabele was also president of the Society for Women and AIDS in Africa. How have conditions improved for women in South Africa, those infected with HIV, because of her work?
Her activism and those of others that she worked with were instrumental in bringing about treatment within the South African public health system to people who couldn't afford drugs anywhere else. And if it wasn't for people like Prudence Mabele, this would probably not have come about.
That's reporter Delia Robertson from Johannesburg. She spoke with VOA's Joe DiCapua.
20 past the hour, you are listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. One of Africa's most respected agriculturalists says Southern Africa should expect price fluctuations in regional food markets for months to come. Professor Nick Vink is the first African to be elected president of the International Association of Agricultural Economists. Vink says the recent drought in South Africa, while not of epic proportions, means the country is set to struggle to provide maize at stable prices to its citizens and neighboring populations. Darren Taylor has the story from Johannesburg.
South Africa's long dry period saw a much reduced maize harvest in 2016. But Professor Funk of Stellenbosch University says some of the effects of the drought on one of Africa's major food producers have been exaggerated.
It's certainly not at the level of disaster that we had in 1992, where plans had to be put in place to actually physically get the maize to the places where it was most needed, where people were the hungriest. And that hasn't happened now, partly, I think, because we're more prepared for it, but also partly because it wasn't actually quite as dry.
Nevertheless, the drought has increased food prices in southern Africa. A 5-kilogram bag of maize now costs almost 60 rand, about $4.50. Inside a store in Johannesburg, shopper Ian Yuba says this is twice what he paid 3 years ago.
Going up. It keeps going up. A lot, you know.
Funk says retailers bought the exorbitant maize available during the drought and stored it in bulk. So it'll take some time for them to clear this stock to see a fall in prices.
The rate at which those prices have been increasing will come down very sharply. You expect between 4 and 6 months before those prices will reflect properly at a retail level.
He explains, though, that a different scenario unfolds during a drought concerning meat prices. During a serious dry spell, ranchers sell animals because there's not enough grazing, and most can't afford expensive fodder. A lot are forced to slaughter animals they can no longer feed.
What then happens is after the drought is over, they have to start restocking. Basically, they then withhold animals from the market. So when there's a drought on, the meat prices will go down, and at the end of the drought, the meat prices will go up again.
So even though the drought's broken, the pockets of meat-loving South Africans like Yuba's are emptier.
Wow, you don't want to go there. Meat keeps going up. No matter how you see it, chicken, everything is going up.
And beef as well?
Yeah, beef. In fact, beef is the worst.
Funk says Southern Africa must learn a few lessons from the drought.
The countries of the region have to learn how to cooperate properly. The producers, your farmers, the government, and the private sector, they also have to learn how to cooperate properly. That's probably a little bit more sophisticated than what it was in the early 90s.
He adds that political unrest in South Africa, where many are protesting against President Jacob Zuma, is also weakening the country's currency and thus ability to perform adequately on world food markets. I'm Darren Taylor for VOA News in Johannesburg.
With well over 1 million migrants and refugees entering Germany in the past few years, there's been a sharp rise in the number of women and girls there who have undergone FGM, female genital mutilation. Reuters quotes a women's rights organization as saying more than 58,000 have had the procedure, which is often common in their homelands. The figure for 2016 is 10,000 higher than in 2015. Terre de Femmes also says at least 13,000 girls are at risk of undergoing FGM in Germany, even though the practice is banned there.
Malawi's Anti-Corruption Bureau, or ACB, has arrested a former agriculture minister and two others linked to a scandal involving maize imports. Malawi was importing the grain to avert food shortages after flooding and drought wrecked last year's harvest. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
ACB officials Wednesday announced the arrest of Agriculture Minister George Jabonda, along with businesswoman Grace Mijiga Muhango and Rashid Tayub, an entrepreneur based in Blantyre. They are accused of illegal actions in the procurement of 100,000 tons of maize from Zambia by Malawi's grain marketer, ADMARC, the Agriculture Development and Marketing Corporation. Mijiga chairs Malawi's Grain Traders and Processors Association. The arrest come after two commissions of inquiry established by President Peter Mutharika and Parliament in January recommended the investigations into Chabonda and others linked to the scandal dubbed Maizegate. Renek Matemba, the ACB's deputy director, he told reporters the defendants have not yet been formally charged.
We normally charge our suspects towards the end. That's why we now decide which charges depending on the information that we have received from them. Currently, they are being interviewed.
The ACB, however, said in a statement Wednesday that Chabonda is likely to be charged with corruptly performing public functions, misuse of public office, and possession of foreign currency, while Muhango is likely to be charged with forgery. Tayub is expected to answer charges of influencing a public officer to misuse public office. In February, President Mutharika fired Chabonda after investigators found nearly $200,000 in cash in the minister's home. Documents leaked to local media in December point to irregularities. The documents indicate ADMARC bought the consignment of maize for $34.5 million from a private Zambian trader. The records allege the maize could have been purchased from Zambia's government for about two-thirds of that, or $21.5 million. Both Chabonda and Muhango deny the wrongdoing. ADMARC has denied the allegations. Charles Kajoloweka is among civil society leaders who have been pushing for justice in the scandal. He told VOA that Chabonda's arrest has come too late.
It is a progressive action, but it is coming, you know, a little late, especially when you consider that these inquiry reports, you know, were released some 6 months ago.
Kajoloweka says he feels the delay confirms that Chabonda, a senior member of the ruling Democratic Progressive Party, had continued to enjoy protection under the current political leadership. In a statement, however, ACB officials have ruled out any political interference in the matter, saying the process of investigations is complicated and needs to be conducted with a due process and detailed care. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. Stay tuned for Straight Talk Africa with Shaka Sali coming up at 18:30 UTC. I'm Yehigis Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Misha Dubinsky, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, an in-depth discussion on African elections. What makes a ballot credible? Some political observers say African elections are often merely selections. We'll tackle the difference on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa. VOA.
to our audience on VOA's FM in Accra, Ghana. We'll be off the air for 3 days of July 20th, 21st, and 22nd to do necessary technical repairs. We will resume our broadcast on July 23rd. However, you can still listen to VOA's radio programming on our shortwaves, 6080 kHz, 49.3 meter band, and 15580 kHz, 19.2 meter band. We are also online at voanews.com. Your friends at VOA regret the temporary loss of our FM broadcast on those days.